Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into this episode of the Gospel Bluth. I just want to take a moment to dedicate this episode to my dear friend Olivia Checkey. Thank you so much for being my friend all these years and for being the first person to experience Thumbelina with me. I love you so much and I miss you and I can't wait to see you again. Thanks, Liv. Bye.
And welcome to the Gospel Bluth. My oh my, it's been a long time. I almost forgot that that was the name of the podcast, the Gospel Bluth. What a cursed thing I have wrought. My name is Lily Mastrodemus. I am not an artist. I have no connection to film or graphic design or any of that shit. I am just somebody who enjoys Don Bluth films, but at an increasingly low rate. I don't know, folks, it's getting bleak, and we're in the dark ages for his movies, so hold on. Today we are talking about the 1994 film Thumbelina, and boy, howdy, do I have two absolute Philadelphian legends here today. That's right. I have not one, but two guests. And y'all, it's going to be a party. I would love to introduce my sweet friends, Heather Jones, the mastering engineer, and Philly comedian and leader of band, Susie Durkins. It's Sam Stokes.
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for heeding the call and joining me today.
Call heeded.
Head. Someone's got to.
It's a dirty job going over these films, but somebody has to. Do y'all have any connections to Don Bluth movies? Do they make you feel something? What's the haps?
Anyways. To be quite honest, until you started doing this podcast, couldn't tell you who Don Bluth was. I was familiar with Secret of Nim, American Tail, all of that stuff. Had no idea that he was behind things like Thumbelina or Anastasia that came as a surprise to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Anastasia was like his comeback after the dark period.
And what a comeback it was. I wrote down in my notes, Anastasia has what Thumbelina wants. Thumbelina wants what Anastasia has.
Mm. Yes. Ooh, I like that. I like that. What about you?
Don Bluth really came back swinging.
It took him a very long time. I'm truly so happy that that he got there. Heather, my friend, what about you and Don Bluth?
I have a long and storied history with Don Bluth movies. They were the bread and butter of my film education as a wee child.
Perfect.
American Tail is where I got the idea of good music from. That's the best music that was ever made, in my opinion. And this one, Thumbelina, was I must have watched it around 50 times between the ages of 2 and 4. Mm-hmm. So I have a long connection to this movie.
I love it. Yeah. Thumbelina was maybe other than Land Before Time, the first Don Bluth movie that I really connected to on a deep level when I was little. We'll get into it as the kids say. I thought I'd just give a brief synopsis of this movie. I will say the plot is, again, like the past several Don Bluth movies, not very complicated. It is based on the Hans Christian Andersen, gives a shit, Hans Christian Andersen film.
God.
You're doing great.
The Christian Andersen film.
That's that's what the Mads Mikkelsen folk tale. Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale, Thumbelina. And as we all know, those tales tend to be a little darker than the Disneyfied versions. But this isn't Disney. This is Don Bluth. Shit is still fucked up in this. Bless you. So this is about, we open on a lonely widow. She is sad. She wants a kid. She visits a witch. Witch gives her seed. She plants the seed. It grows into a flower. When the flower opens, lo and behold, there's a tiny person inside. It's Thumbelina, fully clothed, age 16, fully formed. She is, although we should mention, at this point, she's still like a newborn, despite being fully formed.
I wish that was what motherhood was actually like. Like, the baby just suddenly emerges from a flower. She's fully dressed, fluent in English. Mm-hmm. All I have to do is pull a name out of my ass.
She's polite. She, I guess, has a beauty. She's talent. Like, imagine just, like, having that kid, like, ready to go.
I wish I had rudimentary dance skills like that when I was first born.
Oh, magic is dead. God damn it.
Yeah, when we were born, we couldn't talk, we couldn't walk. Thumbelina is privileged, is what happened here. She was born ahead of the rest of us.
Thumbelina has magic seed privilege, and like everyone else is just born what? Like a screaming potato sack. And she's what? Perfect already.
Born hot.
And spoiler alert. And spoiler alert, the movie doesn't exactly do a good job of tackling the moral problem of aristocracy. So I kind of don't really address that.
That's very problematic, Don Bluth, calling you out. Thumbelina, she's born fully formed. Fantastic. Everybody loves her immediately. One night, her mother reads her a bedtime story about fairy kings and queens and princes. And after Thumbelina goes to bed with the book still open so she can speak to and dance with the pictures of the fairies, a handsome teenage fairy prince named Cornelius rides in, decides to just, like, break and enter. He's brand... like quickly falls in love with Thumbelina, takes her around much
so
like,
fast.
So fast.
It is
love at first sight and then like immediate promise ring territory.
Their relationship really illustrates how easy it is to fall in love when your dating pool is small.
When your dating pool is one person.
Like, they meet, and then 5 minutes later, they're dancing on water while he says, I love you, I'll be your wings, I'll give you everything you desire.
I'll never let you fall, and then she drops, like, 50 feet. Yeah, it's...
And then she's like, you're the only other, like, small person I've ever met, and you're a boy, so obviously... This is it.
And this is a very heteronormative film.
Extremely.
Extremely. On this beautiful ride, they meet the toads. We can talk about the toads till the cows come home.
Oh my God.
They meet the toads. The one toad decides he's in love. After Thumbelina's return home, Toad's mom kidnaps her. And then brings her to the boat. Thumbelina is kidnapped so many times in this movie. Eventually, she makes her way. She isn't kidnapped by the mole. She almost dies in the winter and is taken in by Miss Field Mouse. who then kind of sells her off to marry Mr. Mole.
I was going to say, she's not kidnapped by Mr. Mole. She's sold to Mr. Mole.
Yeah. She, like, the we see the transaction occur. Pretty messed up.
Thumbelina is about trafficking.
Folks, this is the hard-hitting shit we like to talk about here at the Gospel Bluth. Christianity, aristocracy, and trafficking. Oh no. And Cornelius dies, kind of. He's frozen in a block of ice while trying to rescue Thumbelina. A group of children discover him. He is brought back. They melt him, so he's brought back to life. He comes to rescue Thumbelina mid-wedding. I guess the mole dies, or no, the toad dies. The toad dies. And yeah, at the end of the movie, Cornelius and Thumbelina are reunited, and they get married, and they are both 16 and have known each other for a total of maybe like 5 days. And that's the movie.
Well, we can get into later about how long a day is in this movie, because it's very confusing.
I was going to say, I estimated it was more like, they went from being, like, totally single and horny for love to married within, like, what felt like a span of 48 hours.
Yeah.
If I watched this movie with my mom, she would be like, you should pay attention. What Thumbelina is doing, she's doing something right.
And for 47 of those hours, they're, like, looking for each other.
Yeah.
And not around each other.
Yeah. This, like...
They're not even together.
They're not even together. They are, they meet once, and that's it. And they have, like, a magical, like, an Aladdin magical carpet ride, whole new world.
Not as good as the Aladdin one.
Mm-mm. I gotta say, Don, you really screwed the pooch on this one, because... The core thesis to this podcast is that Don Bluth films are better than Disney films. And oh no, my arguments have not been strong as of late. So I gotta say, Don, you really messed this one up. yeah, I like the seasons change like every day. Like it's almost like when you're playing Sims 4 and you have the seasons expansion pack and like seasons last like 48 hours each. That's what time felt like in this.
Well, there was like one day during the movie where I think it like was the first day of fall and then it like became winter by nightfall.
Yeah.
Or at least that's how, what they made it look like.
Yeah. And also, I guess from this movie, we're supposed to glean that fairies control the weather.
Mm-hmm.
Cornelius's whole thing was like, Mom, Dad, you have to put off the winter frost. And I'm like, okay, fairies control the weather, but there's only so much that they can do here. And then Thumbelina comes in and she literally like melts the frost with her voice. Imagine being so hot and good at singing that you can control the weather. That's all I gotta say.
Also, like, Thumbelina's central central moment of like crisis to her is when Beetle calls her ugly, and
yes!
she loses it. It's like, this is what happens when you never say that, when you never like tell anybody that. This is what happens when like you don't get bullied. This is like, yeah, your life is perfect.
Yeah, this is the other side of the coin to hot privilege.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. God, like, and Lord knows I love this movie, despite its faults, but I forgot that, like, that was the thing that makes her give up on life, and it made me mad, I'm just gonna say it.
Thumbelina is a little bit of, well, not a little bit, extremely a Mary Sue.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's so beautiful, she's so talented, everybody loves her, how nice.
Yeah. Her only problem is that she's the size of a thumb. But that's not even a problem, because guess what? She's a fairy. She is magic. She marries a prince, a fairy prince.
Like, her problem is that she's too hot and tiny.
Ooh.
She's like Ariana Grande.
I mean, some of her hairstyle, like,
yeah, I wrote down high pony. I think Ariana Grande got the idea for the high pony from Thumbelina.
I wouldn't.
And she was like, hot, good singer, high pony. This is who I am now.
Well, at least Ariana Grande isn't like completely like hopeless. Like, she's able to take being hot and talented and like turn it into some kind of like effective survival strategy. But Thumbelina is somehow all of these amazing things, but completely hopeless.
Yeah,
I agree with you.
Very, very strong damsel in distress. Also, it is like incredible to me how like she can do the bare minimum and the community rallies behind her no matter what. Like,
yeah. Like, when those bugs are all just sitting around waiting for word from Cornelius that he has a clue as to where she is.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's what happens when you don't own a TV or whatever.
Yeah. or like when the Toad family leaves her on a lily pad and they're like, okay, we're going to come back for you. And like Giacomo swoops in and's like, I'll help you even though you're hopeless. And then they start careening towards the waterfall. And then The fish are like, we got to do something. And then the jitterbugs are like, we got to do something. We got to help this person. And meanwhile, Thumbelina's like passed out on the lily pad, just like freaking out. I guess it speaks to the strength of like community and mutual aid.
This is true.
Yeah.
I think it gets convoluted though because I think the problem is that it involves the proletariat dropping everything to help the wealthy like aristocracy with whatever they need.
Ooh.
Wow.
That's convoluted.
That is some A+ analysis from Heather.
Holy very good. Hell. That is one of the high moments of analysis on this wicked-ass podcast that I do. This dumb shit that I have created. That was very can we talk about... I have so many things I want to talk about with y'all.
Great.
I do really want to talk about Charo Toad.
Oh, God.
When I was a kid, I loved her. Like, I still love the songs. Like, Barry Manilow, who did the soundtrack and, like, the crushed underscore it. And everything, he crushed it. This is some of his best work.
That is very interesting to me because I wrote down in my notes, does Barry Manilow know that music can be good? I really did not like the music in this movie. This movie won a Razzie. Did you guys know that? It won a Razzie for Worst Original Song, Marry the Mole.
Oh, well, Marry the Mole is a crazy fucking song.
I did think not that's know the that. Best one. That's my favorite one.
What's everyone's favorite song from this movie?
I absolutely could not tell you. I'm so sorry.
I think the silence.
Probably Marry the Mole.
Marry the Mole.
It's very practical.
Does Giacomo sing?
Giacomo sings the very first song, If You Follow Your Heart.
Okay. I think I like him the most. I think he's my favorite character, so I guess we'll go with that.
His boots are the best part of the movie.
His boots are great. I had a big crush on him when I was a tiny kid. I can't explain it. I don't know why.
It's the accent.
It's probably... You know what? You're right. He's French and he's a bird. That's too sex for me. JK. So Don Bluth has a thing with French birds. This is the second time in a movie where we see a French bird, like, leading the protagonist to, like, glory or victory or fate. And also the second time where a French bird sings about doing like an impossible thing or following your heart or like believing in destiny. First French bird that we meet was...
Is it Rockadoodle?
No, although, wow, Rockadoodle was... I gotta say, in terms of music in these films, Thumbelina is a massive step up from where Rockadoodle was. But no, it's another French bird with a can-do attitude. Oh, because we see him in An American Tale. It's the pigeon where Fievel like washes to shore, and the pigeon is like, "Ah, I will help you. I will give you a bath. I am building the Statue of Liberté." And
does John Bluth just think that all birds are French?
I think he ha-
are they not?
Heather, that's a really good point, actually.
Yeah,
nobody knows this.
Question answered. Thank you.
Yeah, the jury's still out. Scientists still have no idea.
No clue.
Giacomo rules. He's the best out of those two French birds. That's a great song. I gotta say, "Let Me Be Your Wings." Is just like such a classic for me, even though it is corny as hell. That next to the Beatles song, because I like the music of the Beatles song, even though the lyrics are just like straight up things bullies have said to me in the past. but "Let Me Be Your Wings," I think, is number one. But yeah, Charo Toad.
Yeah.
They gave her boobs.
They certainly did.
They did.
And a pink wig. She looks like Kylie Jenner. Is that mean to say?
No, I think that's fair and accurate.
She looks like Kylie Jenner.
She lives on a boat with three massive sons, her three big sons, Grundle, who is the one dressed as like an Italian clown,
a name that I do not agree with.
Yes, agreed. I agree with your disagreement.
please elaborate on that, because I also agree, but I would like your analysis.
Well, when I just heard that there was a character in a children's movie with the name Grundle, I simply said, "Oh no."
Questionable.
Very questionable. But, you know, language evolves, so maybe it was okay back in 1994, but definitely not gonna fly now, I tell you what.
Yeah, no, it's 2021. Grundle does not fucking fly.
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. In this house.
In this house. I do not remember what the other other names of her big sons are, but they are like variations of like Grundle. It's like Grundle, Mundle, and Tundle. That's not right, but Grundle is the only one we need to care about because he's the villain. Because love makes you do crazy things, guys. And I think that's another central theme to this movie. Is that love?
And that every crazy thing you do in the name of love is perfectly fine. It's okay if you... Anything is okay if you do it for love. It's all fine.
Yeah.
I literally have in my notes, there's a part where all of the bugs are talking to Thumbelina. And she's like... they're like, "Are you gonna marry the prince?" And she goes, "If he asks me, that's why I want to go home. Not because it's where I live or where my mom is. It's because that's where the prince will find me and where I can get married."
Also, like, her poor mom, too. Like, she just had this kid. Like, it's been, what, 2-3 days since she emerged from a rose? And now she's already like, "I'm gonna get married and I'm gonna move the fuck out." So... Sorry, Mom.
Kids these days grow up so fast. Am I right?
That's right. That's right, Sam.
Imagine if she had the internet.
Oh, Lord.
Been even worse.
Talking to Cornelius on MySpace, going on Omegle and chatting with all the forest creatures.
Thumbelina with seen hair.
I'm looking up that fan art right now.
If it doesn't exist, we will make it.
It needs to happen. Amazing.
Thumbelina with a slap bracelet.
Oh, I loved those.
Thumbelina saying roar. Or roar, sorry.
Oh, no. It's becoming too real.
Abort mission, guys. Get out of there. Get out.
Oh. Don't look up that art.
Too late. I gotta be more specific in my search. It's not interesting. Anyway, what were we talking about?
We still haven't really dug into Charo Frog.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Charo Frog. I love Charo. I'm glad they gave her a platform to be Charo. I don't understand why she was in it, or like why her character was like that. Like, did they have to be like traveling? I don't know. I'm conflicted about Charo Frog because I love Charo Frog, but something about it feels very wrong to me.
Definitely.
Yeah, it felt weird, like, knowing that this takes place in Paris, to have the traveling band of toads with the mysterious accents.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, okay, I see what you're doing. I get that that's a thing that we did back in the 90s, but...
Yeah. Know. Yeah, I will say... Don Bluth and like accents and
is that a problem?
It appears every now and then, and you're just like, was that a necessary thing to add?
It feels it going from like the context clues, it feels like he associates different accents with different things. Otherwise, why would he have so many birds that speak French?
That's a good point.
Most troubling about it is there are a number of characters in this movie who could be seen as like the bad guy. Honestly, Field Mouse, most morally questionable, I think. That's like the closest to like objectively evil that I can see. But of all of the negative characters, the one who is ultimately the very bad guy is the one with the foreign accent.
Yeah.
Picked any number of people.
Yeah, you could have. And the thing about that, too, is like, I don't think the actor had to do an accent. Like, I'll tell you, Grundle was played by a guy named Joe Lynch.
Oh, God.
Who was Irish and did not do an Irish accent. So. He did die in Spain, though, so I think, like...
Oh, so that makes it okay.
Yeah, that's, like, exactly. That, like, forgives all of it. It's fine.
Okay. Yeah. Glad we got that taken care of.
Don't worry, everyone. Solved it. Yeah, there's... Because he's very... Don Bluth is, like, he's so good at creating, like, lively characters, like, with... like interesting backstories or personalities or like characteristics. But a lot of the times, like, you'll see a villain, like, and the villains too usually have like very cool voices that are like, ooh, yeah, like that guy's bad. This is an instance where it's like, I don't know, guys. I don't know. This is not a necessary thing, but okay, 94. Go for it.
A lot of people signed off on it, too. They had to have a lot of people be like, this is a good idea. We are going to do this.
Oh, they probably loved it.
Yeah. Everyone thought it was so funny. Oh, no. I just looked at a note that I have that just says, wow, she just gives up.
Several times.
Several times.
So many times. She's like, this is impossible. I'm never going to see my home again.
Like, there's the instance when, like, she meets the beetle and she, like, climbs up. She, like, climbs up the flower or something and she sees her house and she's like, oh, I'm close. And she gets kidnapped again, but, like, upwards. Like, he doesn't take her, like, in the opposite direction. He takes her up into a tree, which is still facing her home. And she gets turned around somehow.
Seriously. Honestly, it makes sense that she gets kidnapped as frequently as she does.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, like, I don't want to put the blame on her.
Oh, absolutely not. But it's just so funny because she, like, wakes up in all of these different places and she's just like, huh? Where am I? And it's like, you got to get out of there. And she's like, but she just looks around and she's like, oh, this is so weird.
I guess I'll strike up an innocent conversation with the first person I interact with after I wake up.
There's something deeply traumatizing about everything she experiences within the first, like, 4 days of her life. I mean, I have a note that says, like, this movie is so fucking sad. And I think at some point you just start to realize that, like, oh, yeah, no, people, like, keep taking advantage of her and, like, taking her away from things and, like, being mean and calling her ugly, which is her only struggle. But also, like, it's a children's movie. So I shouldn't think that far into it.
Well, I was thinking about how, like, when I watched this as a kid, like, the movie seemed like a grand adventure, and she's, like, meeting a cast of zany characters, going on, like, various small adventures within the larger one, and not really thinking too much about it, but really only being able to think about it, watching it as an adult, being like, this person is, like, manipulated and, like, kidnapped, like, the entire time, and it's... If it weren't a children's movie, it would be a very upsetting story. It would not be enjoyable to watch. It would be, like, very, very sad.
Absolutely. Yeah. I honestly, like, I've had a lot of anxiety since I was a child about being kidnapped. And part of it was how my parents raised me. And part of it was certain world events that were happening. When I grew up, there were a lot of, like, things in the news about different girls being kidnapped that were getting a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. I wonder if this registered at all in my little brain that, like, going out is dangerous and I will get kidnapped. I really do wonder.
That's a really interesting point. Because, like, it would be, like, so... clear to, like, a child watching this be like, the world is a dangerous place and Gilbert Gottfried can snatch me up at any second. But at the same time, there's, like, a weird appeal to it where it's like, I'll go into the woods and I'll talk to a bird and I'll play with a frog and meet my prince, and there's magic. I'm magic. But yeah, this is a really good argument for, like, never leaving home.
Or trusting literally anyone.
Or trust.
Except for cute boys.
I think cute
literally
boys,
any cute boy.
We can trust cute boys. Cute boys with queer haircuts.
Cute boys will never lie to us. Ever. That's something that, like, a lot of people have brought up, where it's like Don Bluth only knows how to, like, animate the same type of guy. Like, if you look at Prince Cornelius, and then you look at Dimitri from Anastasia.
Cornelius has extreme Dimitri vibes. Cornelius walked so Dimitri could run.
Exactly. Cornelius is starry-eyed and believes in hope and love in the world, and Dimitri knows better. Dimitri is a salty-ass motherfucker who hates everything. And I think that is the man that we all need to, like, listen to the most in this case. The guy's gonna be like, nah, shit's bad out there. Don't fucking do anything.
Dimitri saw Thumbelina and said, fuck that. I'm not gonna be like that. Dimitri has watched Don Bluth movies.
Speaking of getting it, Deary Mary the Mole, I think, is maybe the most, like, realistic message in any kind of, like, song in this movie or in any of his movies, where the message is literally, love is dumb and it doesn't pay the bills.
Relationships are contractual.
Exactly.
There are two different songs in this movie about how marriage is bad. Like, Charo sings a song about how Thumbelina shouldn't get married because of the burden of domestic labor that's expected from a housewife, which is wrong in my opinion, because Thumbelina is about to marry a prince, so she's not going to be a housewife, she's going to be a princess. People are going to do this stuff for her.
She is going to go through her entire life again with no struggles.
Because, and if she had critical thinking skills, she would know that Charo does not need to be believed.
Never believe Charo. This is another central theme to this movie.
Do not never believe Charo. Whatever she says, don't listen.
Charo always lies. You know, you don't hear anti-love songs a whole lot in kids' movies, and it almost feels refreshing.
Genre-defining, I would call it.
Yeah, I think you'd be correct in that. But I do love the whole, like, because Carol Channing as Miss Fieldmouse is, like, the perfect casting for it. And even if that song won a Razzie, wow, she kills it. Like,
she crushed it.
Yeah, I did not enjoy the song, but when I was watching it, I was like, okay, you can tell that this is, she's a star.
She's, you could just see her in the booth having a blast and, like, getting into it, and, like, but she's probably wagging her finger a lot, and I bet she's having fun.
The other central theme of the movie is that Gilbert Gottfried and Carol Channing will act their asses off regardless of how well the character you give them is written.
That's right, baby!
I'm so convinced that Gilbert Gottfried did a lot of improvising in the booth, because I feel like he's the only person in the movie that has remotely compelling dialogue.
Yeah,
or they like, colorful dialogue.
Or they would have given him free range.
What's going on? Who are you? What's going to happen next? Gilbert Gottfried is over here like, I need to bring you up the tree.
Hey, Toots, I love you. I'm obsessed with you.
Oh my god.
That, I would not be surprised if he was kind of given free range. Like, they've let other actors in, like, these Bluth movies before, like, do a little bit of improv. Specifically, like, anytime Dom DeLuise is in a movie, or in All Dogs Go to Heaven, Dom DeLuise and Burt Reynolds got to, like, improvise together and, like, played off of each other. So some of those lines were improvised. So I can't imagine, like, Don Bluth and Gary Goldman and the other guy who wrote this movie, like, sitting down and going, okay, and then the Beatles says, Hey, ya toots. Mooch, mooch, mooch. I love ya. I'm obsessed with ya. You're beautiful, toots. Just like with a straight face. I can't see it.
It's like all the other characters in the movie will have like one line of dialogue at a time, and Gilbert Gottfried has like entire paragraphs.
Well, it's also funny because like Gilbert Gottfried's dialogue seems to be the only dialogue that feels like a natural reaction to whatever lines are like before it. Like, yeah. It kind of makes sense with what's happening around it, but everything else is so like, I don't know, it's so like stagey.
Yeah, and where, it like
he's actually having a conversation.
It makes sense with his character too. Like, he is like a skeezy fucking show guy. Who would absolutely, like, you see, before even opening his mouth, you see how this guy looks, and you're just like, scumbag. And, of course, as soon as he opens his mouth, Gilbert Gottfried is so good at, like, doing that kind of voice, and, like, making it, like, gross, and, like, just, like, hurtful. Everything out of his mouth is hurtful. Yeah, I'm sure they just, like, gave him the situation, and they were like, she's gonna be scared, just fucking go, just do it, do your thing, Gilly. Like,
yeah, Gilbert and Carol prop the movie up, I think.
Definitely.
Their backs hurt from the weight of carrying this.
Well, especially when Beetle got his wings torn off. By Grundle the Toad.
Sad. Was it sad? I don't remember it. I literally watched it last night and I don't remember it.
It was just like, you know, Grundle Toad being like, you're gonna help me. And Beetle being like, no. And then Grundle like took his wings, which I guess were detachable and not a part of his anatomy.
And like, not an agonizing experience at all.
Exactly.
Very sad.
There is so much suffering in this movie. Like, can we talk about the suffering?
They just glaze over it, so it's fine.
Yeah. Let's go over every moment of suffering in the 1994 film Thumbelina, made for children.
Okay, all I could think about when she was walking around in the winter is how underdressed she was and how she would have easily gotten frostbite in, like, one day. She would have been in so much pain.
She should have been dead.
Yeah, like, if the prince can freeze in water that fast, then she'd be gone, for sure.
Also, do you think that, like, part of the reason he got frozen is... like his parents' fault, because they were just like, well, we got to bring the frost around, and like in an indirect kind of way they like froze him to a point of near death.
They did warn him that there is almost so much they could do. He was making an informed decision, I think.
They also don't stop him. They're just don't do it. He's gone.
Yeah, some very laissez-faire parenting going on in this movie.
It's very, very, oh gosh, what's the
it's
word?
They're French.
Yeah.
Oh my god, you're so right. That's why. That's the parenting style in France. Okay,
wow.
Gotcha.
Wow. It all comes back to the, it all comes back.
Oh, by the way,
this movie would have played out very differently if it wasn't in France.
Absolutely. Can I just say, in the beginning, there is an establishing shot of the kingdom with a moat around it and a river. And I was watching with my roommate, and it says, "Once upon a time in Paris." And my roommate goes, "Do you think that's really what Paris looks like?" And I said, "No."
This is what Paris is. It's a moat. It's empty. Nobody lives there. The sky is on fire, and all the buildings are 400 years old. That's it.
Yeah,
that's
so
Paris.
Hot pink skies and really scary throttling CGI in the beginning of the movie. Did you guys notice that?
Yeah.
Yes. We were being hurled through the streets of Paris.
We were getting establishing shots in a place where none of the rest of the movie would take place. Very interesting choice.
Truly. Yeah.
It's like they had the budget for like a snippet of CGI, and they were like, "Where are we going to use this?"
Right at the beginning.
Yeah, and that's it. I feel like this, like, they started to experiment with different animation styles because, like, in the movie before this, which was Rockadoodle, the worst movie ever, they did have,
like... I'm really bummed to hear that.
I'm so sorry. Oh, I didn't... I didn't mean to.
I haven't seen it in like 20 years.
It doesn't hold up.
I'm not surprised. I'm still bummed.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I cut you off. Continue.
But there is like live action in that movie where like you have like real like humans and like live actors.
I forgot about that.
Then like a cartoon turns a boy into a cartoon kitten. And then the rest of the movie is in cartoon.
That's right.
So they were like really.
I don't like that.
Yeah. It wasn't good. So they're really like going like, okay, what else can we throw at these kids? CGI for 2 seconds.
This like early 90s really was, there was like a wave of mixing live action and animation in a way that was truly jarring. And shouldn't have been allowed.
And none of it was as good as Mary Poppins.
None of it. Like, everyone that tried to do what Mary Poppins did in the 60s can't hold a torch. Mm-mm. No. Did Thumbelina, like, remind anyone else of Britney Spears when they were little? Or is that just me?
Not me.
Okay. Thumbelina reminded me a lot of Britney Spears when I was, like, a little kid. I don't know why. I think it was because Britney Spears is, like, my favorite singer. So whenever Thumbelina sang, I was like, Britney.
I know one singer.
I know one singer, and I know one blonde, and it's the same person. Yeah, I don't know. That's just a fun little, you know, you look at your notes and you see a line and you're just like, when did I write that? Oh, okay.
I haven't even looked at my notes.
Also,
I did see the Thumbelina Ariana Grande connection. So I feel like I kind of get it.
Yeah.
That Thumbelina is, the pop star of this movie.
And she gets famous immediately, too. Like, everybody is talking about her as soon as she gets kidnapped.
Everybody can't get enough of that voice. That bubbly vibrato.
See, I feel like in a movie that is, like, a musical where, like, everybody does singing, I feel like, relatively speaking, they don't really sell her as, like, the good singer. She doesn't do that much more singing than everybody else.
And like, she doesn't dance that well either. It's like a lot of like...
Yeah. And like almost losing her balance a lot while dancing.
There's literally this one part where she's like singing and she sings, I can't, it's like she sings like, whoa! And then she like...
Oh, during the Charo song.
She belts that note. The word whoa, she belts it and then initiates a key change. And I'm like, okay, that's singing.
Charles that's physically true, assaults her and like she changes key. Never.
But yeah, I think Thumbelina is like the ingenue of the movie where it's like, you know, in Phantom of the Opera, how they had Christine and she was the young ethereal singer and then Carlotta was so upset because she was the singer that was actually good. I think that it's the same kind of thing happening here where it's like, Thumbelina's not that great. You just like her because she's young and pretty.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you for being brave enough to say it.
Someone's gotta do it.
There's so much in this movie that like wow. I will say in terms of other, I will say in terms of like other movies that we've covered in like the past like two or three episodes, the animation style is much better. Everything is like more fluid and like, I think it's better animated and the backgrounds are like a little more fleshed out. One thing that I think was maybe the worst animation was like every single mammal was ugly as shit. Fucking Hero the dog is the grossest little creature.
Yeah, what is going on with that dog? He is like missing flaps of skin.
That dog is sick. That is a sick dog.
Also, there's this one part where Cornelius finds out that Thumbelina has been kidnapped, and he says to the dog, "Take care of Thumbelina's mother." And I'm like,
"What?
Sweetie, he's a dog,
honey. Who gave you the right? Who gave you the
and
right?"
And to tell her something, tell her that I'm looking for her. Or I'll bring her home. It's like,
yeah,
what?
I'm sure the mom was like, "Wait, who? Who is?"
Which calls in a question, though, that, like, there's kind of an inconsistency about, like, so, like, Hero the dog can't talk, but, like, all the animals can talk, and the fairies can talk to them. The fairies can talk to the humans. Can the humans talk to the animals? They're all singing in the beginning, but, like, Hero doesn't sing. How do these, like, and, what are the rules of, like, who can talk to whom?
And the mom doesn't react to those songs either. She just like puts up the laundry, and meanwhile, these like gross ass chickens and goats are saying like how much they love Thumbelina. She's something in a skirt. Yeah, it's I guess it's like, yeah, humans can't talk to animals, but like animals can talk to anyone, but dogs are mutes.
This is like a Goofy Pluto situation all over again.
This Goofy Pluto situation comes back to haunt this fucking podcast more than I care to admit. God. Yeah.
I took a screenwriting class recently, and they talk about the importance of world building. I think Don Bluth could probably take a note or two about world building. Oh. And establishing the rules of the world.
I think you're probably right, because there are a lot of plot holes in this, but also just in general, there are no rules. Every problem seems to be fixed easily. Like, there's a solution to every single problem. Like, when Giacomo gets a thorn stuck in his wing, and he's like, "Oh, that's it. I'm dead now. Ow, it hurts." And then Thumbelina pulls it out, and it hadn't even broken the skin. It was just like indenting. It's like, my guy, you didn't have to tumble into.
You have two holes. Hands.
You're a bird with hands.
Also, that him getting the thorn stuck in his wing. There were some of these moments where I would see what was happening on screen, and it would just really pull me back to when I was a kid watching this movie, and I would be like, "Oh my God, I remember this." The thorn in the wing was one of them. And it also just reminded me of how, like, in every fairy tale, there is an animal that gets a thorn stuck in their appendage. And then the nice lady in the story comes by and helps them.
Yeah, and then it's like a witch or a wizard or a prince who's like, "You've saved me. Let me marry you, or let me like give you a gift or something."
Yeah, like the thorn in the animal is like the go-to way in a fairy tale to build up the female protagonist. And be like, "Oh, she's so good. She goes out of her way to help animals. She can be trusted."
She's like, she's literally so nice. She's like the nicest person.
She's literally so nice. She saw an animal and she helped it, and she's nice.
Like, can you guys believe that? like, I would have just fucking stomped on it. Like, just kept it out of its misery.
I would have seen it and I would have said, that's not my problem.
Just like, ooh, gross.
And not only is she so nice, and but she also is a really good singer and she can kind of dance.
Oh, she's like kind of the total package. And like,
also, a prince loves her.
I'm actually like low key jealous of this bitch.
Can we just say she has four different men fighting over her in this movie? Yeah. Cornelius, the toad, the beetle, the mole.
Oh my god. The fucking mole! John Hurt as the fucking Mr. Mole. Okay. First of all, terrifying man. And he is a man. Let's just make that clear. Mr. Mole is a man.
Mr. Mole is an adult man.
He's an adult man.
Mr. Mole is a he-him man.
Mr. Mole going around saying, like, don't touch anything, it's mine, is, like, very, like, okay, yeah, so, like,
this is gonna be a very happy and fun marriage.
Yeah. Uncomfortable.
In this house where I am not allowed to touch anything.
I was, like, trying to think about, like, what that marriage was gonna be like, and I just decided not to put myself through that thought process because it was not going to a good place.
Well, he said something about, like, to the field mouse about how, like, she can tell me stories, and I just imagine her just, like, sitting at his side reading him stories, telling him stories until she literally fucking dies. And it was awful.
Oh my god.
It's terrible. It's a terrible image to put in a child's head.
Also, if that's, like, the only thing he wants, get a parrot. Teach it to talk. Yeah. Get, like, the mole equivalent of a parrot.
Get a...
Could he learn to read?
Well, he's a
mole.
Teach
a man to fish?
Blind.
Ugh.
Literally, okay, it's 2021. Mr. Mole, just download Audible and you'll be set. Everything will be fine.
Again, these problems have solutions. They are so obvious.
Yeah, and okay, fine. This took place in 94. Whatever. They had books on tape back then.
Yeah.
Go get yourself Grapes of Wrath, something that'll last you a while.
Get the Harry Potter series on tape, because you know that's what Thumbelina would have been listening to and be like, I get this. Also, I thought that, like, Mrs. Field Mouse was, like, into Mr. Mole. And when he was like, oh, I think I'll marry Thumbelina, I thought she, like, I had a memory of, like, her having a more, like, severe reaction to it, of just, like, heartbreak. But seeing it now, it's like, oh no. No, she's, like, just trying to make some coin.
Yeah, she could not be happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's a human trafficker.
She's an awful person. She's a really, truly awful person.
That's why she got the Razzie.
That's it. It seems like, other than Cornelius and Giacomo, Thumbelina only meets terrible people.
The thing about Giacomo, though, is that, like, this is a note. Okay, this is a thought I had about Giacomo. He is a useless friend. Okay, he is, like, totally... He is not a helpful friend. The first thing that happens is, like, the first time they meet each other, he literally dives down, which apparently swallows can do is swim underwater. I don't think they can actually do that.
They cannot.
And cuts the lily pad and immediately sends her towards a waterfall, right? So it's kind of like an out of the frying pan into the fire situation. And then eventually, when he rescues her later, he just tells her, like, oh, you're lost? Follow your heart. And then just lets her off into the woods with no map, compass.
And
like,
she's
it's
like,
not helpful.
And she's like, yeah, you're right. I should just follow my heart.
It's terrible, like, advice.
It kind of reminds me of, like, the advice that my mom will give me. Because her life was just so different from mine. And I'll tell her about stuff that's going on in my life. And she'll be like, oh, okay, well, have you thought about just going with what you feel? And I'm like, okay, thank you.
And we're done.
No song.
Giacomo is like the friend who is always like, yeah, let's hang out, and then cancels. And then you like ask them for a favor and they're just like, yeah, no, I'm on it. Like, you're right. He's trying his best, but he is not a good friend.
He's not doing a good job. Like, his heart is in the right place, but his follow through is really bad. Except for when he somehow decides only at the end of the movie to use his God-given ability to fly to bring Thumbelina where she needs to go. And he could have just done that.
Yeah.
When they first met.
Giacomo is like that meme where somebody is drowning and they have their hand up and somebody reaches down and just gives them the high five.
That's it. That's 100%. That's Giacomo.
The high five God. Is labeled follow your heart.
He's like, I'll help you. You got this.
I will be making that meme. I will. Thank you so much for that.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, like, Giacomo was my favorite character. I loved him when he got thorns stuck in his, I almost said paw, when he got thorns stuck in his wing. That always made me sad. When he died, that always made me very sad. Watching it now, I'm just like, bro, you know, one song, can you just, like, get your shit together and, like, stop being a love hippie? Like, he's 100... 100- He's like 100% like one of those guys. Like, if he was a human, he'd be like going like around the world, just like, yeah, man, just like follow your heart and like you'll get to where you want to go. Like,
Giacomo is hitting the blunt.
He's deep in that kush. 100%. Oh my gosh, wow.
I will say, I would probably be more inclined to listen to people like that if they were also wearing, like, Argyle sweater vests.
Mm. Yeah, I gotta say, he's got a great look going for him.
Oh, it's wonderful, it's amazing.
The most fashionable bird I've ever seen.
The boots, the sweater vest, the puffy sleeves, the hat.
The hat.
The sexy accent.
The sexy hot... hot accent that we all love so very much.
It makes the doobie hitting attitude pretty bearable, you know, as a package deal.
Also, okay, when he sings, like, if you follow your heart to Thumbelina, and, like, those can-can birds come out and are just, like, going, woo!
Beautiful.
Thank you. I've been practicing all day. there were other, like, can-can birds in fucking An American Tale when Henry the French Pigeon, like, brings out his, like, lady friends, and they're all, like, can-can pigeons who say woo a lot. This is, like, another thing that Don Bluth is just like, yeah, the kids are gonna like this.
There's also an entire can-can number in Anastasia.
That's right!
When she is in Paris!
Guys, Don Bluth needs new ideas. Let's brainstorm.
Yeah, he's really recycling all of this.
By numbers, really.
What do you think his next movie would be? Like... in this day and age, given to mind he is 84 years old.
Oh Lord!
Oh my God!
I don't.
Does he have a young writing team?
I don't know. So, a lot has happened with his writing team. There was the whole.
Oh, I want to hear about this.
So, it was either before or during or after the production of Land Before Time. I think it was before. His whole, like, studio, like, tried to unionize, and he was not about that. So he moved his studio to Ireland, which is where his next few movies would be made. because I guess it was cheaper and he didn't have to pay his artists that much. He also paired up a lot with Steven Spielberg and George Lucas. And let's see. Yep, this Thumbelina was also made in Ireland.
Imagine not wanting to pay your staff so bad that you just move to a different country.
Right?
That's got to be expensive.
think about the cost.
Your studio? It's like, is it really going to cost you that much less to move your whole ass studio to Ireland than pay your freaking writers for your studio or whatever?
I mean, it's funny you say that because Don Bluth Entertainment had filed for bankruptcy after that point. So Thumbelina would not have been completed without the help from a man named John Borman and also Hong Kong-based Media Assets. So it was really a team effort to get Thumbelina made.
Oy,
it shows.
It does. So I would love to talk a little bit about the reception of this movie and also just like the ins and outs. The budget for this movie was $28 million, which seems insane to me.
That's 1994 dollars, too.
Yeah.
Anytime I hear how much a movie costs to make, I just get depressed. It just washes over me.
It's like, who has that much money? Especially for...
to do this.
This, yeah.
Of all things.
Of all things.
Still can't pay your writers enough.
Still can't pay them. Which is funny because Don Bluth wrote the screenplay for this movie. So
that shows.
Yes. Oh, I found the names of the other Toad brothers.
Oh, great.
Yeah, great. I know we were all on the edges of our seats. But it's Mozo and Gringo. So great job.
Oh, great.
Great job, Don. Great. Fantastic. Glad you wrote the fucking screenplay to this.
Don Bluth was like, what is one Spanish word that I know?
I mean, the man is a Mormon from Utah. So, like, a lot of what he writes about it doesn't make sense, but it's also like that's his like worldview is very like white conservative,
chauvinistic,
somewhat sheltered, like that's it. Like I said, the more I watch these movies, the sadder I get that this is what I built this fucking podcast on. Just want to issue an apology to everybody.
Lily, can I just say, when I heard that you were making a podcast called The Gospel Bluth, I thought that it was going to be about Arrested Development.
Yeah.
So maybe you can make that pivot down the road if you decide that Don Bluth is no longer fulfilling you creatively.
That's a good point. Just go on over to Arrested Development, which certainly doesn't have any problems. But no, it is an option. Okay. Fun fact about Thumbelina. It was a commercial failure.
Who would have guessed?
It didn't even make half of what it cost to create. Didn't make it back. Rotten Tomatoes gives it 27%. Roger Ebert says it is difficult to imagine anyone over the age of 12 finding much to enjoy in Thumbelina,
which is generous. Which is, like put it at like
I would
seven.
Say three.
I mean, like, you know, I will say when I was like 5, 6, 7 watching it with like my best friend, like this was our shit. We were like, fairies, yes. Magic, yes. Talking animals, yes. Great songs, yes. Like, there was nothing to hate except for the ugly ass dog. But, you know, watching it now, you're like, oh no. It's a lot of human trafficking and racism. Child marriage and racism and that. It's rough. It's a rough time.
Values that we do not stand by.
No, exactly. Exactly.
It really shattered my original perception of this movie from when I was like barely self-conscious, you know, like this is maybe the biggest pivot I've ever done on a movie.
Wow. Holy. Yeah. I mean, like watching it as an adult, like I feel like, yeah, you're definitely not going to find it as like enjoyable or magical as you did. But it's, doesn't make it any less disappointing and like upsetting, because you're like, this movie meant so much to me. And like I'll be honest, like I still love this movie. Like I see its faults and I embrace them, minus like 2 or 3 or 4 there.
By the way, I just want to say that's there's nothing wrong with that. That is totally okay. I have the worst taste probably in human history when it comes to the movies and TV that I love. So let's just establish that.
Thumbelina, problematic fave. Yes. So I want to just like do a little background on the fairy tale that this is based off, because weirdly enough the movie is like not super far off from the original fairy tale. It's like almost in like a faithful retelling, because like Thumbelina is born from a barleycorn sprout, emerges from its flower. She is kidnapped while she is asleep in her walnut shell cradle by a toad who wants her as a bride for her son. Although she escapes the toad with the help of a friendly fish and a butterfly, not Giacomo. But then she is quickly captured by a stag beetle, who later discards her when his friends reject her company. So, and I gotta say, the beetle posse in this movie is so cool. I want a posse of people who, like, dress up almost exactly like me and just, like, silently do whatever I say. That would feel powerful. She gets lost in the winter. She's given shelter by an old field mouse. And while she is living with this field mouse, she sees a swallow who is injured, and like nurses it back to health for a very long time. And it turns out that he is like the swallow is falling in love with Thumbelina, and like all of the stories that she's telling him, because as we all know, Thumbelina can tell stories. Despite also being 2 days old, she knows a breadth of stories.
She was born with stories.
She was born with the knowledge of kings. I don't know. At the end of the winter, the mouse suggests that Thumbelina marry the mole. But Thumbelina doesn't want to marry the mole and finds it repulsive because she loves the sky. Not this guy. She loves the sky.
The sky. That's the romantic. Sky.
It's really...
That's way more romantic than the movie.
It's really...
Of course you do, Thumbelina.
Thumbelina is so nice, and she just, like, loves the sky.
I Imagine not getting married. Imagine not getting married because you're like, I love nature too much.
That's exactly it, though. She's just like, you're kind of gross, and like, that's whatever, but I like trees and grass and sunlight. And you're a gross old man. I don't know.
I really like how she turned down the wedding in the movie when she stops the wedding to be like, I can't. I'm in love with the other person that I just met yesterday.
Yeah. Again, this movie takes place over the course of like 72 hours. Like everything moves like that. It's whiplash. Yeah, it's fucked up. It's a fucked up movie. Okay. Last minute, Thumbelina escapes the situation. I know. I had, like, again, it's not, the movie was not far off from the original fairy tale. She escapes, and then she meets, like, when she escapes, she meets a flower fairy prince just to her size and liking, and they get married. She receives a pair of wings and takes a new name, Maya. And in the end, the swallow is heartbroken once Thumbelina gets married and flies away. And that is the fairy tale. So, knowing that now, how does it shift your perspective of the movie at all? Or is it, like, kind of the same?
It's just
I feel like... Go ahead.
Thank you. It's just so interesting because Hans Christian Andersen wrote the story. You can tell plenty of the actors improvised their dialogue. Barry Manilow wrote the music and presumably the lyrics. Don Bluth really did not have to do that much heavy lifting to write the screenplay.
Yeah.
He couldn't even... Never mind. Heather, you go ahead.
I think there, on one hand, really could have done more to build on it, I think, because I think even the fairy tale seems lacking in some kind of, like, motive for the character or any kind of aim or path, and at least this guy she just met who's super hot is at least a path for the character to follow for, like, an understandable reason. So yeah. That is, like, it's, like, she's not just, like, aimlessly bouncing around. She's like, I gotta find this really hot guy I met yesterday. You know what I'm saying? That, that way it's a better story, you know?
I will say, like, the romance that blossoms between Cornelius and Thumbelina is, like, pretty accurate for 16-year-olds. Just like,
yes,
very lukewarm, just like, you're hot, I love you, and like, that's like, when you're 16 and you see a cutie, you're just like, you're hot, I love you, you're gonna meet my parents.
Like, this whole story is basically, it would be unchanged if the two of them, like, met on Tumblr. Everything would go exactly the same way.
Yeah, it's just like, he responded, he quoted my post and, like, gave it another note. I forgot Tumblr lingo. But no, you're absolutely right.
This is just heterosexual U-hauling. Let's just call it what it is.
Yeah.
Again, thank you for being brave enough to say it, Heather.
Someone
has to say it. Also, the idea of Thumbelina getting married and being like, my name is Maya now, is hilarious.
Like, that's the wrong name that usually gets changed when people get married, sweetie.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, she's like, I'm Maya.
She's like, I don't want to take my husband's last name. I want to change my first name.
Because I'm a little different from the other girls.
Yeah, and you know, me being married is like being a new person.
Sorry, Mom. God. My last note is just, which I guess was written when I was watching The Wedding, is just, I want what they have.
And by that you mean getting married on a rainbow, right?
That's right. I want to get married on a rainbow while my giant mother watches. And my decrepit dog watches. Yeah, that's just the dream right there.
I props to her mother for showing up at that wedding. Okay, that sounds fucked up, but okay, so if I were her mom and I watched this happen, I'd think like, okay, the instant you met that boy, you went missing for like all of autumn. No one knew where you were.
It looks bad.
This guy is bad news. Don't like him. And she just shows up for the wedding, and I think that's very big of her.
And I gotta say, she looks adorable in her bonnet. She's got like a little country bonnet. It's
like much better than her wedding outfit with Mr. Mole, where she looked like Harley Quinn.
Okay. Yes. Can we talk about that outfit and that wedding? Because, wow. Yeah, there's a lot to be said about the outfit just in general. The braids, the ponytails, they stood on their own. How did they do that?
Maybe it's because of how many of them there were.
It's mole magic. Maybe if you have
enough, they just do that.
Did they, like, stick something in there? Did they, like, put something on her hair to, like, keep it that straight?
Mrs. Fieldmouse put some wire in there.
Probably.
I'm looking at a picture of her right now. She's got, like, a big, like, lace collar. Like she's a court jester.
Yeah.
And for a bouquet, she's holding like a mushroom. This is the saddest wedding I've ever seen.
It's also funny because like all of the fellas are like there for her. And it's like, you invited all your exes to the wedding. How quaint. Although I will say Cornelius's return legitimately gave me chills. I know. Sam is making a face, but you know, I know how that sounds. It's just when she sings and then he comes back and it's like a key change and he's just like throwing his shoulders back and like the sun is shining.
You know, that's fair. Key changes can make me very emotional too.
I'm a very simple girl. but yeah, like, can you imagine being a guest at the mole wedding?
And no.
Fair. Fair.
Sorry, continue.
No, very fair. Just like being like a lizard or a fucking mouse in that church and just like watching this unfold and being like, who is she? She's doing what now? Just like, I don't know. I would have thought she's a gold digger.
How long has he known her for?
She can do what? Tell him stories?
Mr. Mouse's new gal. There's something a little bit off about her, but
yeah,
as long as he's happy.
All the Beatles think she's ugly.
Also, another we were talking about how species interact with each other. Like, have all animals seen fairies before? Because if they haven't, they'd look at her and they wouldn't even be like, that's a weird fairy. They'd be like, what is that? They really wouldn't know, like, the person. They don't know what a person is. Except for, like, big people, maybe, if they see big people.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just foresee a lot of unillustrated culture shock happening that they don't really elaborate on at all.
It's kind of like in Fern Gully when Krista shrinks. I know. This is me now. When Krista...
Is Fern Gully also Don Bluth?
No, but it is another cartoon that I hold very near and dear to my heart. Right. But it's like when she shrinks down, like, the guy, and then, like, he starts to get eaten by a lizard, and the lizard is like, what is it? And it's just like, well, it's just a guy. Like, you've seen fairies. You've seen fairies. You can, like, look at a fairy and look at this guy and see that they're not too far off from each other.
Yeah.
Like, are you looking at pictures of Ferngully right now, Sam?
I certainly am.
I will say,
jog my memory.
Robin Williams as Batty is a defining moment for me. He raps. He does a rap.
Okay. Color me interested.
Oh, and Tim Curry is the villain. He plays a pollution monster.
Has Tim Curry ever not played a villain? I'm pretty sure his presence in a movie is, like, to signal that he is the villain.
He's a perfect villain. He's a sweetheart and a perfect villain.
He really is. He's got the most villainous face of anyone ever.
And the most villainous voice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not Tim Curry.
Have you guys ever seen Scooby-Doo and the Witch's Ghost?
Yes.
No. He started out thinking that Tim Curry is a good guy, and then, sorry for the spoiler, but you're wrong.
My sister and I were, like, watching it with our dad's friend when it first came out, and like, when he gets, like, sucked into the book at the end, my dad's friend just goes, ah, that guy just got sucked into a book. Like, that's right, Dave.
Yes.
some crazy shit, man.
In this movie about witches and ghosts.
But also, can we agree that the Hex Girls are, like, the best band ever? Ever. Period.
Big influence on all of us, I'm presuming.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Heather said that you've never seen it, but...
I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's good. It's like Zombie Island and the Witch's Ghost.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah.
I'll send you the link.
Thanks.
It's on YouTube.
Is it really?
Oh, absolutely. I've been watching it on my TV like several times in a row over the past few months.
Oh, I know what I'm doing tonight. Wow. Thumbelina.
Remember her?
No! What a tale. If you had the option to watch this again and recommend it, would you?
Certainly not. I'm so sorry. I know that it's near and dear in your heart. And it was for me too. I have very fond memories of going to the little local video store and staring at the cover that had a little prince and princess standing on a book and being like, wow, I need to see that movie. But after watching it, I'm like, no, I'm good.
Yeah. Okay. Can I preface my answer? Sorry.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so I had a theory by the end of it. It's like, what if Thumbelina wasn't written poorly because of chauvinism, but actually was written blankly from a lens of existentialism? She's kind of like the, it's like The Stranger, but a kid's movie.
Mm.
And she is the first person. And that's why all the secondary characters are more vivid than she is, because we are her and we can't understand ourselves. And it's a bullshit theory, but under the very, very baloney-based pretense of that, I would recommend it. But on no other basis would I recommend it.
So anybody who isn't into Thumbelina just doesn't get it.
Sorry. That, you know, philosophy has never been brought into the Gospel Bluth, but
I'm sorry.
No.
I'm sorry.
No. I love it. I love it. I think that's a really, like, interesting argument, because there is something to be said about, like, how, like, blank and new and, like, starry-eyed she is to everything. Like, even when she meets Beetle, she's just like, oh, hi! You seem fun!
It's weird.
Yeah, it's weird. But, like...
It's really weird.
But she still understands that, like, getting kidnapped is bad. But... yeah, it's... It's just... Yeah. Do y'all have any final thoughts about this film?
My final thought is I started this at 7 o'clock last night and didn't finish it until 11:45.
It's 86 minutes long.
It was that much of a chore for me. I would watch it for like 10 minutes at a time and then be like, okay, let me just take a break. So that's how I felt.
Oh my god.
That's I didn't pause it when I had to go to the bathroom.
Wow. Fucking hell yeah. Two perfect final thoughts. Well, folks, wow, thank you for grinning and bearing through Thumbelina with and for me. Where can the folks, the fine folks who are listening, where can they find you guys? Plugs.
So for me, you can find me by, you can find me on Twitter. It's, my at is SAASDFGHJKL. It's an S, three A's, and then across the keyboard. Or you can search my name, Samantha Stokes, which might be easier. Who knows? And then my band can be found by going to susiephl.bandcamp.com. We have a new EP that just came out a few months ago called How to Talk that was actually recorded with
It's true.
What?
So glad it finally came out.
Finally came out.
And it's so good, too.
Oh, thank you.
So good. Oh my goodness. Heather, where can the fine folks find you? Are you hiding?
No, I'm just scratching my foot. I prefer not to be found.
I'm shy.
Do not find her.
No. you can, I'm mostly on Twitter. But the easiest way to find me is to go on my Bandcamp, which is therrr.bandcamp.com. And then the links to all of my socials can be found in the side banner thing.
Sir, another great band. I'm telling y'all, two Philly Giants. Here, here talking about bullshit with
small
me. if you like the sound of my voice, oh boy, I'm losing shit. I would like to plug my band Long Neck. We put an album
amazing
out
band.
In April. Oh, very nice. Thank you. Wow. I do not take compliments very well, but they mean the world to me, so thank you. We put out an album in April called World's Strongest Dog. You can check that out. It's fun.
The album is named after Hero.
The album
World's
is
World's Emotionally Strongest Dog.
World's Strongest Dog Taking Care of Mother. Yes.
I'm so sorry, Lily. I had to do it.
No, I set myself up for that. It's perfect. It's all good. Yes, it is for and about Hero the dog. I'm on Twitter at Lily_Mastro with the zero. And I just got a Letterboxd account. All of the reviews on there are just for Don Bluth movies so far. So follow me there. at @Lily_Mastro with a zero. I'm not about to cry. I'm just realizing the words that I'm saying, and it sounds insane.
I think you're doing something amazing. Oh,
God, what a time to be alive, everybody.
So
well,
true.
So unfortunately true. Well, thank you both so very much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having us.
This is so
thank you. It's really fun.
This is so much fun. I'm so glad I got to chat with y'all. Stay tuned for the next episode, which we are still in the dark ages of Don Bluth, so it's gonna be a mess. So thanks for tuning in, thanks for listening, and we'll see you somewhere out there.